Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Crazy.
Hello and welcome to episode number 96 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's nearly Christmas, if you celebrate it, that is, and, well, it's nearly the end of December if you don't. But either way, end of December is shutting the door on 2020. I'm sure that's something we're all looking forward to, wouldn't you say? And this week, like the last few, I'm going to mention our Patreon page where you can support the podcast. It's really quite important to us. And if you are able, you can support us from as little as £3 a month. You can find our Patreon page at patreon.com/Ministry of Arts, or go to the bio of our Instagram page and you can follow a link there. As I say, for the price of a cup of coffee per month, it really could help us out. But back to this week's episode. Several weeks ago, I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down for an hour with artist, printmaker, plate painter extraordinaire, Miss Eliza Hopewell. I first saw Eliza's work maybe 2 years ago. In a very short time, she's become quite well known for her loosely drawn painted portraits and using regular dinner plates as her canvas. Her subject is often, but not exclusively, the female form. And like the work of Sarah Maple, Eliza's portraits have the amazing ability to make the viewer smile on first sight. And the beauty of the humour in these paintings is the fact that by the time the viewers realise what they're smiling at, Eliza has forced from you an opinion, because you're either smiling at the subject or the subject matter. It's genius in its simplicity, because the paint she uses is translucent and you don't have to be that close to see that there's a strong message below that humorous veneer. More often than not, feminism, racism or social injustice. And speaking of injustice, that's pretty much what I'm giving Eliza's work, because she can tell you about it a whole lot better than me. Because of social distancing, this conversation was recorded over Zoom. So let me introduce you to Eliza Hopewell.
Did you find that after your mum passed, has she crept into your work yet?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was kind of the first thing I did really when she died, and when she was in the hospital in that kind of week, and you know, it's horrible, like seeing someone dying is kind of actually worse than them being dead in a way, because like it's just so such a, it doesn't make sense in your head. So it was so tough. And the thing that I really the only thing that I found, well, two things. One was running. I was like running every day for like miles, and that really helped. And then also I was just painting tiles. My mum loved tiles. She was like really big on tiles, like any, like, but especially like the Alhambra and like any kind of like Spanish Islamic tiles. She had a lot in the house. And so I was just painting these like little, and it felt so easy because they were just like 15 by 15 centimeter tiles. And I just paint one. There was no pressure to it. And I painted about 100 of them just over that like week and then the weeks following. I sort of carried on really just painting. It just felt like something that it was a distraction and it was a way to like process the grief without kind of having to be too intense about it or having to like work out what it meant.
Processing the grief at your own pace, aren't you? When you're doing it like that. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. It felt like really natural to do it at the time. And I've still got these tiles. I've not done anything with them yet, but I'm not sure. But I want to make them into something, like put them on something. But she's in my work a lot. I mean, at one point I was trying to paint a lot of photos of her, like paint pictures of her, and that didn't end up going. But she's been in my work a lot. She had cancer for 9 years before she died. So, and she had terminal cancer for 6 years. So all through uni and everything, we knew she was going to die, but we didn't know when. And I that also was part of my artwork a lot. I made like films of her, and yeah, there was a lot. She was in all my artwork, really.
Yeah. My partner's dad, he died 2 years ago, just gone. And he got diagnosed and then he got given 3 months.
Right.
And although cancer, you know, it's a fucking horrible disease, but it does give you time to... You know, my nan died walking down the street.
Yeah.
Bang, she was gone.
Yeah.
It does give you that little bit of time to sort things out. And
Years is
you know, a huge length of time, but it does give you a little time to get things in order and say goodbye, doesn't it, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think there's there's no good amount of time before someone dies.
No.
But yeah, it's good. My mum sorted out all her money and everything and all of that stuff, so it wasn't, none of that was difficult. And but 6 years was really weird because it wasn't like she was given 6 years. She was given a year, 6 years before she died.
Hear those stories.
I know. Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, it was amazing. And yeah, she kind of, I don't know where she got her like strength from, but she would like get really sick and look like she was going to die and then just bounce back and go back to work. I mean, honestly, she worked up until about 3 months before she died.
Excellent.
Amazing. But it was difficult because, you know, like if you know someone's going to die and a couple of weeks, you're like, you can get really intense about it. You can be like, I love you, and like have all those really difficult conversations. But over 6 years, you kind of have to try and live normally, but also try and kind of have the best moments you can.
You're on a different level of life, aren't you, really?
Yeah. And it's kind of, you get quite like stuck in a way. I think for me, after a few years, it was really like difficult to process because it was like, well, you're gonna die but you're not dead yet, and I'm also, you know, young, and like I'm trying to work out, I'm living at home with my mum, but should I move out because I'm like 23 and I want to move out, or should I stay with my mum because I don't know, she could die in half a year. There was a lot of kind of difficult decisions. So in a way, when she did die, there was a sense of relief to some extent, you know, because of this like just ongoing illness and just never knowing when it was gonna end.
Had family members pass before, like close family members?
No, not close ones, because
I found with my partner's dad that knowing that it was going to happen, it softened the blow when it happened anyway. You know, it was just part of the process when he sort of jumped on the train off, you know, you knew that destination was coming.
Yeah,
make it a lot easier, and almost we've even said that the way that my that her dad passed, it was almost a perfect way to go. You know, full of family and
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think because then my grandpa, who was my mum's dad, who I was really close to as well, he died like 2 months after my mum, which also was terrible, but it felt really different as a death because he was 90, do you know what I mean? And like he had had this incredibly active life, and even up until like a month before, he was like, he was an artist, and he would like get things from skips, like big bits of wood, and like carry them home, like honestly. Brilliant. He'd be like going down the road, like
excellent.
And then he literally just went into hospital with septicemia, and it's amazing because apparently, and we just didn't, you know, it was within about an hour that he died, and he wasn't really sick leading up to that much. And the nurse was like, "All right, what's your name?" You know, doing her thing, and he was like, "Oh, my name's John Hopewell." And then she was like, "Okay, I just need to run a few things." And he was like, "Can I have a hot chocolate?" And she was like, "Yeah, sure." And she turned around to make him a hot chocolate. And when she turned back, he died.
Oh, fuck. Wow.
Yeah. He was just like, "That is my last request, please."
The last one was a hot chocolate.
So good. So I'm couldn't John even wait for it. A hot chocolate. Goodbye, everyone.
Man, it's good. I like that. I have, I mean, I think we should talk about art.
Yeah,
I have 7 questions that I ask each artist.
Okay.
And the first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
I would say, I think that this is a hard question for me, actually, because, well, I would say, you know, I started a business painting on plates, and it's become more than a business, it's become a practice, but it still has elements of being a business. But yeah, I suppose I would say that I make kind of artwork about people, that are paintings of people, mostly women, that are kind of set within a kind of world where these women are free and can do whatever they want.
How did the plates come about to be your canvas?
Well, yeah, it's kind of basically just because I needed money. And I was just, you know, I hadn't painted for the whole of when I was at art school. I was making films. I wasn't interested in being a painter. But, you know, I came out of art school and I thought, right, I tried to work in film a little bit, but it didn't quite fit. And then I was working at a gallery as an invigilator. And I just thought, and I think a lot of artists do this, they're like, maybe I could start a craft business, you know? And I just thought, what could I do? And someone told me that if you draw on like just a dinner plate with a Sharpie and bake it, it will stay. Which I tried, and it's not true. It's not true. And it looks shit. But after that, I was like, there's something in this. So I was just experimenting, and then I bought some paints where you can just paint onto porcelain. And it almost, the business kind of happened before I decided, like I was like drawing them and kind of like showing them to people. And then people started being like, "Oh, can I buy one?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. What do you want on it?" And they'd be like, "Oh, can you do me with my cat?" And I'd be like, "All right, do it." And then it was like, suddenly I had like 10 people lining up being like, "Can you do me one? Can you do me one?" And I thought, "Oh yeah, I guess I could just make this a thing."
Yeah.
And then it progressed so fast because really early on, it was like a friend of mine's ex-girlfriend's mum's friend, something, worked for Vogue and was Laura Bailey, who's she's like an editor at Vogue. And she put me in Vogue really, really early on. And then it was just like, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, which was amazing. But it was like I was playing catch up the whole time. Do you know what I mean? Like I always had like a backlog of like 30 plates that I had to make, even from the beginning. And, you know, I'd been making them for about a year. I was still charging about 30 quid to paint like a commission plate that would take me like 15 hours, you know. I'm thinking, oh my God, I've made it.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
and not making any money really. But yeah, eventually I kind of had to give up my job at the gallery because I was like, I just had so much on. And
yeah,
to be honest, it had a life of its own as like a business. And it wasn't until a couple of years in that I was like, had to be like, right, I'm not doing commissions anymore. Everyone stop asking me to do them. I need to take a second and be like, what the fuck? Like, has just happened, you know? And at that point I was like, because it had just been commissions mostly up until that point. And I was like, actually doing commissions day in, day out, it really takes it out of you. And I was like, you know, I'm a creative person. I want to make what I want to make. So for the last kind of year and a half, I've pretty much just been doing what I want.
You still do commissions?
Not really. I do. What I'd now do is I'll take on commissions that aren't on plates because I cannot, I must have made, I worked it out about a year ago. I think I made between 600 and 700 commissions.
Wow.
And it was like one a day for about 2 years. And it was like, yeah. I used
was
to work
on your own
like,
as well. Did you have help with you or?
At one point I employed someone, but it kind of didn't really work because I mean, it just, you know, it's quite difficult to get someone to do a painting like you want them. I don't know. Anyway, so I was mostly on my own. And for, most of that time I was working like from my bedroom 7 days a week, you know, just smashing them out. So now I sort of drove myself into an absolute, to the edge of sanity with like making
so many
of
them. I mean, you said that by being featured in Vogue, your profile just shot up. How was that for you mentally? Because we all go at our own pace and we have a sort of distant destination and all of a sudden you get fast forwarded down the track and then you're in a world what you don't really know. You're trying to catch up with yourself, aren't you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was quite like intense, but I think I quite like that, you know, especially as suddenly, you know, all these people were following me on Instagram and listening to what I was saying. And I love attention, you know what I mean? Who doesn't love attention? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and especially like it, the thing that I really enjoyed about that and still enjoy is talking about politics and being able to kind of, weave in how I feel about things politically and into my practice, and like humor as well. And like dancing videos and stuff, like all of that stuff is.
Well, funnily enough, that's when I first saw you. It was a couple of years ago, and I don't know how it came about, but you was in, I presume, your studio on a ladder that shouldn't have even been in there because it was enormous. It was like maybe maybe an 18-foot ladder on a
floor,
which was meant to climb up somewhere that was like 10 feet high. And you was dancing on it to, what was the fucking, Uptown Top Ranking, I think it was. And you was dancing, and I'm like, any sec that ladder's going to go, she's going to like really hurt herself. And then I went through, and then it turns out it wasn't the first time you'd done it.
No. Yeah, that ladder was, I don't know how that ladder never fell, but it never did.
I used to work on building sites like, as a hod carrier going up and down ladders, and I was like, fucking hell, it's so much of an angle, she's going to kill herself. I think that's the first time I've brought health and safety into a podcast. When was your first interest in art?
Oh, I was always really interested in art. My grandpa he was an artist, but he was an architect when he was, has a job, but then he was a painter when he retired. But he loved art and he went to life drawing every week. And he mostly looked after me, him and my granny, when me and my brother were little. And so I just wanted to draw all the time. It was just very natural to me. And I just used to spend hours. My grandpa had like a studio in his house. And I just wanted to be there all the time. I would just go in there and be like, he would just give me, I used to do these things called meter girls where my grandpa would measure me out like a meter of paper. And then I'd do like a meter long girl on it. And then I'd be like, next one, there are so many of them. But yeah, I mean, from the age of, and I would draw all over the walls in my house. And my parents would be like, oh my God, please. I would like write Eliza. And they'd be like, was this you? I was like, no, it's my brother.
It weren't me. It was not me. See, I always feel quite envious when I speak to artists who say that art has always been in their life, because I never even looked at it until I was like 27, 28.
Really?
It wasn't a thing for me at all. And then all of a sudden, like you were saying, how things propelled for you, I went from knowing no artists whatsoever to knowing all these fucking YBAs within a few months.
That must have been weird. Did that give you a kind of weird perspective on the art world? Because that's not most people's experience.
Well, I was talking to artists, Eliza, that I didn't know their position in the art world.
Yeah.
Do you know my story?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I didn't know. I knew that they was all in this exhibition called Sensation, which was on at the time.
Mm.
And I knew that they was all, because it was a sensation and it was sort of on the news in the papers, I knew they was part of this big machine that was, you know, running through the media. But I didn't know on what rung of the ladder each of these artists were that were writing. And I knew... obviously Damien Hirst, because he was Damien Hirst, and the same with Tracy Emin, and Marcus Harvey because of the Myra Hindley painting that he'd done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only three that I knew.
Yeah. And
all the other artists that was writing to me, I had no idea until they started sending me all this stuff in.
Yeah.
And then I'm reading it, I'm going, fucking hell, these are sort of like, some of these are like the equivalent, more or less the equivalent of sort of like Elton John, you know?
Yeah, pop stars. Yeah, literally. And
Yeah, that was quite strange.
Yeah, it must have been weird because, and I suppose, I think that this happens sometimes. It's like if your naivety can carry you through, if you know, because really, like, nobody who had like been to art school and like, you know, been like into art and known about art since they were young would have the guts to like write to these artists, because they'd be like, why would I do that? Nobody's ever going to write to me. Do you know what I mean? Because
well,
they're
I
so
get that now when I speak to like people who are doing podcasts or curators putting on exhibitions, and they're going, I'd love to have, I don't know, Gavin Turk in my show. I said, well, fucking email him. And
they
go, oh no, I couldn't. And I go, well, he won't be in your fucking show. You know, you won't have any chance. Best off asking.
Yeah.
It was quite bizarre.
Yeah, it must have been.
Which piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think these tiles that I made after my mum died, they really have something. Because, you know, some of them I painted literally within like 2 hours of my mum dying. And
beautiful.
Yeah, they've got something so pure. Do you know what I mean? Like there's no overthinking at all in them. They're just very, very pure images. And that's something I think that I personally have always strove to get in my artwork, but it's a really hard thing to not, you know, tell yourself, don't overthink. It's like, you can't, but there's something in those tiles that's like really the way I see artworks and have always seen it is like it's a meeting point for the artist and the viewer, you know, and this is like the thing between them for it's like speaking, you know, it's like explaining something about how you feel or what you think, and then it's for somebody else to view it. And I think that getting a really pure like channel of that connection between an artist and an audience member, or just even as an artist, because you can't really control what anyone else feels, but just being able to really definitely, exactly, perfectly put in an image what you mean.
Yeah.
That's the best form of art for me, you know, and I think that's what those tiles do.
Well, the tiles, it sounds to me like the images that are on them have come directly from your heart down your arm. You know, normally we would, as artists, you'd think about the composition and what you're going to put in it, work with the colours. But when you're doing something like that from the heart, it's almost as if your mind has nothing to do with it, you know, and whatever comes out. And the beauty that I feel in these tiles, even though I've not even seen them, is that
you don't quite understand what they are yet. It's as if it's your mum who's sort of getting you to draw, you know, and paint. It's beautiful. And I love to know the moment when you sort of realise what it is that you've put on them tiles. It could be tomorrow, it could be in 5 years' time, couldn't it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
It makes sense.
And it's amazing how you can look back at artworks that you just, you know, at the time sat down and went, I'm just going to draw this hat or something, you know, and then you look at and you're like, what the fuck? It's like you feel like some kind of, it's like you, I don't know, it's really weird. You feel like you've time traveled or something, and you're exactly. like, or it's like, yeah, just bizarre. I did a painting of like a self-portrait when my mum was sick, because she had cancer in her breast, her liver and her brain, and when it spread to her brain, I did this painting and it was like self-portrait. And then when I looked back on it, it was like I've got one hand on a breast, one hand on a liver, and then there's like an egg above the head that's cracking.
Brilliant.
Didn't know why I was doing it. I didn't know what. And then I'm like, it's weird.
Excellent. I love it when that happens. I really, really love it. I've not experienced it too much myself, but I have looked back on artworks a year, you know, a time later and gone, fucking hell, that's what it meant. That's you know, I've done this without, and I knew at the time that I wasn't quite sure what I'd done.
Yeah.
And I had to sort of catch up with myself, you know. And
I think
it's brilliant when that happens.
Yeah, and I think so too.
On the flip side to that, sometimes I may finish an artwork and go, oh, I've nailed that. And then I'd look at it a while later and go, oh, that's not hit the mark at all.
Yeah. Oh my God, that happens whatsoever. To me all the time.
You said earlier that you paint with ceramic paints. I mean, one of my questions was that I wrote down, because I didn't look at the materials that you use. I didn't know whether they were glazes or paints or what have you. Have you tried the glazes, or is that not a route you want to go down?
Well, no, I've literally the other day just ordered for the first time some glazes, but I don't know any. I've never done a ceramics course, or like, you know, most people I speak to think I like throw the plates and paint the glaze on and whatever. I've never even seen a kiln. I don't know what it's about.
It's either going to be a realm that you wish you never stepped into, or wish you'd done it from the start. It's going to be one of those two things.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really been like a materials person. I'm too impatient. I'm not a process person. I just want the thing to be there and I want to get it the quickest way possible. But I've got a good friend who's a ceramicist, and she's been talking me through the things I need to buy and how I should do it and everything. So because I'm making these tiled tables with my boyfriend, and I want to...
I've seen those.
Yeah, which nice. I'm really into and enjoying. It's a nice, way to escape the plates, you know, and kind of do something. And it's really nice working with someone else, actually. I've never really done it before.
Nice.
So I'm planning on doing some actual proper glazed and fired tiles for those. And see how that looks. And I also want to make some tiles like for my house as well, like tile bathroom floor and stuff, just see what happens. But yeah, I do use these kind of like porcelain paints, but they're quite limiting.
I think that's a good thing when you've got restraints, because you have to work within that restraint. It's just like you painting on that. It's like you painting on a plate. You can't paint outside it. You've got your perimeters to paint.
Yeah,
you know?
And yeah, I quite definitely. Like that.
When I was in jail, I had like fuck all materials to work with. Mm. At one point, they took my paints and they took all my art materials off me. Left me with an HB pencil.
Why? Why did they take it away from you?
They said I was being subversive.
You should have told them. Yeah, that's the whole point.
I'm in jail. I'm an artist. What am I doing? Cut my fucking ear off. So they took all my materials off me, but then that just made my work even stronger, just for that small period.
That's so interesting. And,
once you have all your materials, you know, there is no sort of end to the materials you can use.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be fun experimenting. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, it'll be really fun. But yeah, I do agree. I love having limitations, and the reason that I've carried on doing the plates for so long is, it's such an exciting thing to have those perimeters. I have 10 inches, 10 diameter inches, and that's it. And like nothing, you know, and it means that you have to, yeah, I don't know. You have to like create everything you've got in this like very small space, everything you want to say.
Yeah.
And I think that can train you to be quite clear as an artist, you know, when you haven't got like a whole fucking massive wall size canvas, you're like, right, well, there's no room for waffle, you know, like yeah. Got to say what I'm trying to say. And also there's something about, I think, like psychologically, if you learn something sitting in a certain position, like if you learn something sitting at a table, then if you go and try and like, say you learn a poem, then if you go and try and repeat it, you're much more likely to remember it if you're sitting yeah. at a table than if you're like lying down on a bed or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's like the way that your body's been and the environment that you've been in is like part of the learning process.
It's like when I look at your work and like even you like going through your Instagram page, everything's circular. I do think to myself, how is she when it comes to painting on a corner? You know, if you do something square, it's like, I've never been to this angle before.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. Like when I first started doing the tiles, it was, I really had to get used to it. It really was weird. It felt like there was too much space, even if I was painting on
yeah.
a tile that was smaller, that was like 10 by 10 centimeters.
Yeah.
I still was like, it just felt like there were like bits of it that I was like, yeah, I didn't understand. Excellent. Yeah, but no,
that's
I've got a bit more used to it now. But you know, the materials you use and what you paint on affects the way you make art so yeah. much, yeah. you know. And since I've started doing the tiles, I've kind of developed a completely different way of painting and drawing than yeah. I had done
Brilliant.
Painting on the plates at all, which, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. So that's why I'm so excited to start using glazes and actually firing tiles, because I think painting with something that isn't paint, painting with something that also then you're going to send it away and it's going to get fired and you don't know what the fuck it's going to look like. It's going to yeah. be, yeah, it's going to be really exciting.
Nice. Mm. Well, I like the idea that craft and fine art can ebb and flow and move about and cross over boundaries. I know a lot of people don't like craft going into fine art and vice versa, but I think it's, I mean, look at Sarah Maple's last exhibition, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you walked into that, I don't know if you went to the show itself. I
didn't go to the actual show,
but
no.
When you walked in there, it was like everything, every different medium was in there, you know, in a fucking sitcom.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, crossing over these boundaries, it just does so much, I think, for an artist and for a viewer.
Yeah, I think so too. And I have a real problem with people who don't like craft crossing into fine art, because craft is art. It's just not seen as fine art because it's always been something that working class people do and women do, and that's not seen as, you know, good enough because the art world is elitist, and I just yeah. think that's bollocks, you know, like what, it's just a different medium of making yeah. and that's why, like, when I first started doing the plates, it was why I was attracted to that medium, because it's this, you know, in the kind of 1800s, painting on plates was this like female, like, well, it was quite like a middle class woman's thing to do, but it'd be yeah, like when the husbands yeah. went to work, to give the middle class women something to do while the servants were cleaning the house, they'd go to these like groups and, you know, paint their little blue plates or whatever. And as, you know, because of that, they're, when you go, you know, you see them in your nan's house, like the Queen's Golden Jubilee plate,
yeah, yeah.
and they look, they're really kitsch. They're not really like a respected art form. They're seen as sort of a bit stupid and like pretty and decorative, and like they're very feminine. And I found that really interesting, and I really wanted to subvert those ideas, you yeah. know, and make people see something like a decorative plate painted by a woman as like a really valid art piece.
Mm. I mean, it's not as if Picasso never, you know, painted on a ceramic plate, is it? You know, he's done
yeah, exactly. of,
you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Grayson Perry's done a lot over the last 20 years for bringing the craft into that realm and pushing it out.
Yeah.
I can't yeah. see. I mean, furniture, like you're just saying, putting your images into furniture, I mean, that's a completely different realm again. And
yeah.
I can't see, me personally, I couldn't give a a toss. It's like you said, art is art. Where it's placed and how it's put there is a different thing for me, you know. I don't care at all. Have you found a certain plate that you like working on?
I mean, I always work on what, as in you mean like type of actual...
You know, is it a one from a certain one you found from Debenhams that you like to work on, or an IKEA plate that tends to sort of the guy that works better for your material?
Yeah. Well, what I do is I buy these like hotelware plates. They're called Athena, and I get them like in a box of 36. That's how I was able to work out how many commissions I've made through like working out how many emails I got. But I always get these boxes of 36 plates, and I can't even remember how many of those I must have ordered. 500 different times. I don't even know. Yeah, crazy. So that's kind of what I feel comfortable on, and what I have felt comfortable on. But I've not painted on a plate for quite a while now, because I got some printed at a factory up in Stoke, and they're all here now, and that's been really nice to not have to like do everything myself.
Is that the blue ones?
Yeah,
I saw those. They're cracking.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of Matisse I saw creeping in there. Matisse is one of my favourites, and I see that a lot in the loose figurative work. Beautiful.
Yeah. No, Matisse, I think, is actually... I've got a Matisse tattoo on my back. Can we see?
Oh, go on.
Can you see it?
Yeah, superb.
Yeah, the brilliant dance. I love Matisse. He was my first real great love, and I still, you know...
I'm with you there.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah, with Matisse, I think, he's obviously the most joyous work.
Everything you're about to say, I'm going to agree with. It's brilliant.
But the other thing I think about Matisse is, you know, I think he really respects women for that time of painting. And when you look at like him and Picasso as contemporaries, the way that Picasso paints women, I mean, which is incredibly interesting in itself, but I think he paints how he sees them. But Matisse, to me, really paints the woman. He's not painting any kind of like objectification or any kind of, you know, sexualization or...
It's almost as if Picasso paints with lust and Matisse paints with love, more or less, you know?
Yeah. But I also, you know, Matisse, he was really great friends with lots of women. Like I went to the Matisse Chapel. Have you ever been there?
Oh, man, that's one place I'd love to go.
Yeah, it's always been like my one place that I'm like,
I'm with you.
I have to go there. Like it's my art pilgrimage. And my boyfriend and I went to it was like about 3 hours away from the chapel in the summer. And I was just like, we have to go there. We're fucking going.
Was you able to go in?
Yeah. It was just like it was in like July. So it was like between the lockdown. So we were all, we had to wear masks, but it was honestly the most beautiful and mesmerizing thing I'd ever seen. And the story behind it's really interesting as well. I don't know if you know about it, but he had this model who he was really great friends with. I can't remember what her name was, but she then, even though, you know, it was his last piece of work that he made before he died. So he was really old. She was really young, but they were just best mates. But she decided to become a nun. And I think he was really sad to see her go, because she went off to, you know, some nunnery to be a nun. But then she came back to Vence near Nice, where he was living. And she was like, you know, the nuns of whatever thing she was part of wanted to make a chapel. And she was like, will you design this chapel? So they kind of designed it together. You know, she was like the person who brought him in and, you know, wanted, and I think he had a lot of like battles with the Catholic Church about like, because the robes that he made for the priests to wear are like ridiculous. Yeah. I think the Catholic Church were like, absolutely fucking not. He was like, absolutely fucking yes.
Yeah, they are pretty cool though, aren't they?
They are amazing. The thing I regret is that I couldn't see a service, because they wear them, you know, when they do the sermons, and you can just go in, you know, and experience that. And I would have loved to have done that. But it was really incredibly It didn't, it felt like it could have been for any religion.
Yeah.
It was just a place of worship, you know, and yes, there was like, there's Mary and Jesus and everything, but there was something really kind of open about it. Like you felt like anyone could have gone in there and felt close to whatever God, you know, and I'm not religious, but whatever version I have of spirituality, I could just feel that there was this, it really held you, that chapel. It's tiny, you know, it's fucking tiny, but it was really, it was so spiritual.
Excellent. Yeah. Did you go to a show at the Tate about, maybe, I don't know what it was, 4 or 5 years ago?
4 or 5 years ago, yeah.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, the bit I loved, because I'd only ever seen all this in books, Eliza, you know, where I've been away. But when I went up there and there was a massive, great big painting, like at the length of one of the walls, and I was like, just working my way along it. And then all of a sudden, there's a fucking door cut in the canvas, the door handle cut out of it, where it was so long for him in the studio, he just cut a hole in it for the back of the door. Fucking brilliant, brilliant it was. I thought it was amazing. There's not many artworks that I've just stopped. And like my jaw has dropped, you know.
Yeah. I find Matisse like that's what. Yeah, and that show was just. I mean, it's incredible. And when you look at, you know, these pictures of him when he's old, like he's like what we're talking about it just going straight from your heart down your arm, and he's just
there. And they're on a great big stick as well, you know.
You know, it's
a wand even.
Yeah, or even like him doing the cutouts, like you see him with the scissors, just. No hesitation whatsoever, just like straight up, you know, he knows, and he's just not worried. But I think he also just has this real respect for life, and what he's trying to say to you is like, look at this beautiful life. Isn't it fucking gorgeous? And I love that. I find it really,
it's because of him and my love of Matisse, I love that sort of that really loose fluid flow of a brush. Your work yourself, that's, you're saying about, we were just talking about the windows in the chapel, the work that you create, that could easily go on the glass as well, couldn't it?
Yeah At one point I really wanted to make some stained glass. It's something I'm still really interested in, but you've got to have a bit of money to, you know, start, like do a course or whatever, but it's definitely something that I would love to do. I'm really interested in art in domestic settings, which is why, like, now I own a flat, which is insane, and it's fucking amazing because I can paint on the walls. I can like do whatever I want. I can put a stained glass window in my window, like. So
have you and your boyfriend got similar taste in art?
I wouldn't say we have similar taste. I think we both know what's good and like respect a very like wide range of art, but we're very different in what kind of, in the way that we make art, and he's very form and he loves kind of everything he makes. He's more of a sculptor basically, whereas I'm totally have no spatial awareness whatsoever in my artwork. Like I cannot work on anything that's 3D, honestly. It has to be flat. Like I just don't. And I'm more figurative, and so we've definitely got, but I think our styles merged really well. And his dad died about 4 or 5 years ago, and his dad was an artist as well. So we've got a really good artist, and we've got all his dad's artwork, and that's all up. And then I've got my grandpa's and mine and Theo's, and like,
fucking hell, is that the best sort of artwork you can ever have on your wall?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it's great.
Because my partner, she's not into artwork. She's not into art at all. And she just likes what she likes. And, fucking hell, man, she'll buy something, bring it out and put it on the wall. And I'm like, what the fuck? I can't. But likewise, you know, I'll make something that will have so much meaning. You know, it will mean so much to so many people. And she'll go, I'm not having that.
Get really?
The one I just got out of Argos back up.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Fucking hell, man, it does my brain in. But likewise, it's horses for courses, and it is all our taste. If it was all the same, it'd be a fucking boring world, wouldn't it?
Exactly. And I love talking to people who aren't like into art or don't really like know much about art or anything, because I'm like, you know, it's one thing putting on an exhibition and like most of the people that I know and operate within are also artists. And it's kind of a bit like, but surely if you're a really good artist, then you're speaking to everyone, not just people who know loads about artwork, not just people who've been to art school, but, you know, and the best artwork does, best artwork, everyone can get it, you know? Yeah. And so you want to have that input for your work. Like, I love asking, like my brother, he's like, couldn't give less of a fuck about art. He honestly is like, you're so weird. Can't, he's like, but I love being like, what do you think about this? You know, because he'll be like, oh, it's like, you know, I think there's like a bit too much blue in it. Or whatever. Like, just things that artists would never say. Like.
Yeah. But ain't that fucking beautiful? I mean, that's one of the reasons I made this podcast.
Yeah.
Because I want people who aren't into art to listen to art, to see art, to go and cross the threshold of a gallery, because it absolutely, without question, changed my life 180 degrees. And because people, look, I'm from a council estate in East London, or in Essex, and you know, people don't go to galleries, you know, they've got no interest in art. And I'd say to people, like, record covers, you know, that's the art that most people know, you know, and they don't think of that as an artwork. They think of that just as something to accompany the record, you know. A voice like mine, I don't think I heard enough in the art world.
Fuck no.
And like you say, your work has got a lot of humour in it. Humour isn't seen enough in the art world, I don't think. No. Again, we spoke about Sarah Maple earlier.
It's interesting because humour is the great equaliser, isn't it? Humour is the thing that, you know, you can go into a room where you've got, you know, so, like, people of just all different backgrounds, all different, like, classes, races, whatever. But if someone can make a joke, it will just complete, everyone can understand it. It's just completely equalizes. It's not something that, you know, you have to know loads about to understand or whatever it is. And that, for me, humor is kind of the most important thing in art, I think. It's the thing that just, why would you not want it? And if you take someone who doesn't know anything about art to a gallery, they will always go and look at the funny thing.
Yeah,
they will always want to see that, you know? And that is the way, like, you know, if you did a big prison trip with all the guys that you were in jail with and took them to a gallery, 100% they would like anything that was funny, you know? Or at least, even if they didn't like the way it looked, they'd be like, yeah, but I get it. Do you know what I mean? I'm glad it's here, because it's made my day.
Well, that's one of the reasons why the graffiti artists and street artists have sort of had such a boom. Because they just sort of like take everyday symbols, turn them in quite politically.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that again, you know, I know you're quite political. That humour is a good way to introduce political subjects to people who aren't necessarily into them, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, it's just a really good way to, you know, kind of unpick the sort of difficulty and the language around politics and the language around art, and just make it something that isn't scary anymore. Definitely. Just make it something that's, accessible. I think it's incredibly important. And I think, you know, all the best people are funny, aren't they? Like, the people that are good at dealing with life as well, I think, like, not even just artists or however you're being creative, but the people who are kind of the most stable and enjoy their lives the most laugh a lot, you know, and are able to see the funny in other people and able to see the funny in themselves. So it's like humor, I just think, is the most powerful version of art, regardless of whether that's image making or comedy or whatever. You
know. Well, my half brother phoned me up, or he sent me a text yesterday, and his mum died yesterday. So, but he sent me a text, and he said, like my mum died. And I phoned him up as soon as I saw it, which was a few hours later. Mm. And fucking hell, Eliza, within about maybe 20 minutes after he's had his cry, we're laughing like a couple of silly boys, you know?
And it is,
I mean, you know yourself that sort of emotional pain and humour, there's just a little fucking line between the two, you know?
Totally, absolutely. And it really, like, honestly, I mean, this is maybe a bit intense, but when me and my brother went to see, my mum had died like in the really early hours in the morning. We went at the hospital when she actually died. But obviously first thing in the morning, you know, we got a call from the hospital, went in to see her body. And it's like, you know, my brother's younger than me, like, and we were both just so completely stunned. It's like the weirdest thing. Neither of us have ever seen a dead body. Like, it was mad, you know, walking in and being like, what the fuck are we doing, and blah blah blah. And so we're like standing there and just like, you know, looking at my mum. And then there's a knock on the door, because it was like a little private room, and it's the like nurse with the trolley, and she's like, what do you want for lunch today, dear? And me and my brother just were like, dead. And then we just both started cracking up, because we were like, this is the most ridiculous situation. Do you know what I mean? But in a way, it was the way, the thing that enabled us to like connect to each other and kind of be in the room together, you know, and like really be like, have a, yeah, have something to say to each other, have something to connect on. So, I mean, even in the darkest time, like, humor could be the thing that brings you back to earth and, yeah, connects you to people.
Well, the thing is, we're talking about this situation there and it being funny for you and your brother. That lady could be telling exactly the same story with a complete opposite. She's like, fucking, I walked into this grieving family and I've asked what she wants. Do you know what I mean? It's mad, isn't it? That she could be having the same conversation, but it being the most embarrassing moment of her life, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think she heard us laugh, so hopefully she was like, oh, you know? I mean, honestly, in a way, she was the person who gave us something to... She was... It was good, you know? I'm glad she came in and asked my mum what she wanted for lunch.
A proper icebreaker.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you do to relax?
What do I do to relax? I run. I love to run. I really love to like jog. It's something that I've been doing for a few years, and if I go for a run every day, everything in my life gets a little bit easier. I'm a little bit less stressed. I find it easier to work. I find it easier to sleep. So I'm quite an insomniac. But running is, I find it very relaxing. And watch films. I watch a lot of films.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I'm a real film buff. I'm actually considering going to do a film master's in a couple of years, just to kind of, it's something I really love. And
where will you go for your master's if you decide to do one, do you think?
Well, I live about 5 minutes away from Goldsmiths. Perfect. So that'll be the obvious choice. Definitely somewhere in London, I'd say. Goldsmiths would be great. I haven't really done much research into it. It's something I've only started like thinking about in the past couple of months, but it's just, I've always been really drawn to film, and my whole degree, I just made loads of films and I loved it, absolutely loved it. So I love painting, but I don't feel, when I talk to my friends who are painters and they really are proper painters, the way they talk about painting, I'm like, I don't feel like that about painting, you know? Yeah. I really don't. I love it and I enjoy it and I feel, you know, it's fun and it's easy for me, but I don't feel that like passion in the same way most of the time. Whereas I do with film. So I don't know.
So you're still making the same work that you made a few years ago. I mean, the same process. It's just the perception of others that puts you in these different categories, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I only asked that question because you've mentioned the business of it a couple of times. And you've mentioned the craft of it, and you've also mentioned the aesthetics of your work. And then, I mean, you can wear all three of those hats. But some people just prefer one to the other.
I think that I kind of have to wear all three of those hats because I'm not quite sure where I situate myself. But, you know, I sell everything I make. I don't make anything that I keep, you know. So, you know, people are like, oh, can I come and have a studio visit? And I'm like, you can, but it's just a desk.
Nothing boxes there. Boxes of a feeder plates in the corner. Crack on with them if you want.
I'm not sure. I suppose I feel like, you know, I'm still working it out, and I, in a way, not kind of committing myself to any of those boxes makes me feel like, you know, just it's nice to be a bit free.
Freedom, of course, Is there a plate of your mum's that you'd like to paint on?
I don't know. I don't think so, actually. I didn't take that much crockery from my mum's house. I don't have that much. But I would like to paint... I would like to paint more stuff for my mum, you know. Nice. I never really painted a plate of my mum somehow. I don't know how I missed that one, but... Yeah, I think that, like, bit by bit... Well, I just think that my mum will be in all my artwork and I'd like to just carry that on.
Yeah. If it was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Matisse, obviously. Who else do I love? I love Alex Katz. You know Alex Katz?
Oh, of course.
I absolutely love Alex Katz. There's something about his paintings that I feel really... They just are what they are, you know, and he talks about art so brilliantly. Yeah, and I find his paintings really easy to look at. They're so quick and free and I love Lisa Bryce. You know Lisa Bryce?
Not the name. I may know the work if I see it.
She had a show at the Tate Britain maybe like last year. She makes like, and then she had one, god, was it Stephen Friedman maybe, she does a lot of like blue paintings. She made like these screens. They're all kind of women, often they're like in a state of kind of like half undress and they're like smoking. I mean, it's not that dissimilar from my work in content, but they're just beautiful. I mean, absolutely beautiful, and they've just got such power to them. Who else do I love? I love Martin Creed. Talking about funny artwork.
He's good.
Martin Creed.
He fucking annoys me because I go to his shows and I say to myself, I'm not going to be sucked in. I'm not going to sort of fall for it because I don't know whether he's taking the piss out of me as a viewer or welcoming me as a viewer. And every time I go to one of his shows, I say, I'm not going to fall for this. And I walk out feeling as I've been abused just a little bit.
I absolutely love that. Yeah, there was a piece, they're all called like piece number 200 and whatever, aren't they? But there was one it must have been that show at the Hayward like a few years ago. I think it was at
Hayward. That's what I'm talking about in particular. Yeah,
and there was one that was like a piece of paper and you had to really lean in because it had like tiny, tiny writing and you'd like got to go really, really close and you're like this far away from the paper and then it just says fuck off. thing that I love of his is similar to the other piece. It's just a song called Fuck Off, where he's just like, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off, the whole song. It's really good to listen to when you're angry. It's so cathartic, I find. Sarah Lucas is someone that I possibly would have around my table as well, or in the group show. Yeah. She is brilliant. Just beyond, isn't she?
Yeah.
Although actually, maybe I'd swap her out for Gillian Waring, because Gillian Waring's someone that I just think she's so interesting.
Yeah.
And talking about, I mean, I love films, but I don't really often feel moved by artists' film work. It's quite rare. I think it's quite hard to do well, but Gillian Waring is someone who, Christ, her film work is just amazing. There's a film that she made called 2 into 1. Have you ever seen that? It's quite old.
I don't think so.
It's wonderful. It's like she filmed a mother and her two sons and talking about each other. So the mother's talking about, you know, oh, my sons are so brilliant and blah, blah, blah. And the sons are being quite mean about their mum. They're being like, she's always late and, you know, she's not that pretty and like she could do more with her hair and stuff. They're young, you know, they're little kids. And then what she got them to do was she recorded the audio and then got them to learn the audio and mouth it. So the mother was saying what the sons were saying.
Oh, nice.
In their voices, and the sons were saying what the mother was saying. And it's this really eerie, funny, beautiful kind of family portrait, but it's quite edgy. And I love it. Do you know the work of John Smith?
Yes, he was my lecturer at uni.
Really? Oh my God. Brilliant. Because I saw his piece, it's called The Girl Chewing Bubblegum. I saw it in Barcelona, and it's like just a film of, it's like black and white film just of a street. I don't know where it is, it must be somewhere in London. And it's just you know, people walking across and like a car driving by. But he does a voiceover on it where he pretends like he's directing it, and it's so funny because he's like, "Okay, it's time for you to come out from the left." Yes, and now he's whatever, you know. It's so good. It's so good. I love his work. Yeah.
Well, if you wasn't an artist, Eliza, what would you like to be?
I know what that'll be, and I think it might be something later in my life I might do. I'd love to be a therapist.
Oh, nice. In which area?
I don't know. I don't really know much. Well, I suppose, like, because it's quite confusing. I've looked into it before. There's a lot of different ways you can train to be a therapist. You can do, like, well, you can be a counsellor, and I think you can do, like, 2-year training to be a counsellor, or then you can, like, and there's so many different kind of schools of psychology and etc. But I feel really attracted by the idea of talking to people and, you know, learning about people's psychology. I'm definitely an advice giver to my friends and my family, and it's just something I love to do in my life, to, you know, like, really listen to people. And there's this like intense focus that comes with when you're having like a really good conversation with someone about them, and really like listening to what they're saying and trying to help them pick it apart. That is just one of my favorite things to do in life. I love it. I absolutely love it. So
I'm there with you on that. What have you got coming up, Eliza? I know it's a bit hard in the moment we're living in.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of on the brink of a bit of a, I don't know what's going to happen in my, you know, I'm on the brink of experimenting with all these different things and starting to do the ceramics. And so I'm kind of holding back a little bit on planning any exhibitions or anything, because I feel like I'm about to change what I'm making a little bit.
Well, it's as if you're doing your foundation course after you've done your degree, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
The way you're approaching your work.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I know, it's a bit wild, but I'm really excited about that. But yeah, so to be honest, I'm feeling like about this next year of my life that I'm gonna just like try everything, or not try everything, but try a few different things kind of see what sticks. But I've not got any, don't think, any like exhibitions or anything planned at the minute. I've got a residency next year, which I'm really excited about. I was meant to do it this year. It's a Villa Lena, it's in Italy. Beautiful. It's a hotel. Kate Bryan put me forward to it. Fairy godmother, honestly. She's godmother to just all artists that she's met. She's just like sorting things out for everyone left, right and center. I love her. So that's really exciting. But I mean, I'm feeling like ready to...
Well, the world's upside down at the moment, and who knows what's going to happen. Where can people see your work and what's going on, be it website and social media?
Yeah, I think Instagram, really. Instagram's where I post my stuff.
And what is your handle on social media for anyone that doesn't know?
It's at Eliza Hopewell. And then I've got a new one, which is me and Theo are kind of... I don't know where it's going to go, but we're really planning on making... We've got a Instagram for our house, but it's kind of an art house account, because we're just making everything in the house. You know, Theo's making all the furniture. I'm painting shit on the walls, you know, we're making tables and wardrobes and things together. So,
and they can be massive.
I'm really excited about that, actually. I mean, you know, already working within a kind of domestic context with my artwork, it feels such a like natural lead on from that. I think we will start doing kind of commission pieces for people's houses. And I've already done like a couple of murals, and Theo makes, you know, wardrobes and bits for people. So that I'm really excited about. And that's at Artist's House Broccoli, as in the vegetable.
Excellent. Well, Eliza, that's all my questions asked.
Oh, it's been absolutely lovely. I've had a wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much for your time. I really
appreciate it. Yeah.
I loved getting to know you. And stay away from them fucking ladders, man. You'll kill yourself.
Have a great day. Lovely to meet you.
And you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Eliza Hopewell. That's a conversation I've been looking forward to having for a very long time. I mean, it's always a bit unnerving when I speak to an artist that I've got no relationship with, you know, that I've never met before. But I should have learnt my lesson by now. That all the time you're having an honest and open conversation about art with a fellow artist, conversation's never going to run dry. When I'm editing these podcasts, I generally cut out the private conversation I have with the artist before we start the actual podcast itself. But I'm listening to the start of this recording when Eliza and I were talking about the passing of loved ones from cancer. I thought it was something really quite beautiful, you know. And I hoped Eliza would agree to letting me keep it in. So if it did cross your mind, I did contact Eliza and ask, and yeah, she kindly agreed. Which is why it's there. And if you don't mind me getting all serious for a minute, after living in these precarious times since March, when our immediate future is jumping from one lockdown to another, it is putting quite a lot of strain on a large amount of people. But if that strain is affecting you, and even sort of getting the better of you, there's loads of people out there you can contact, you know. I hope this don't come across patronising, because it's really not meant to be. But sometimes even talking to a stranger can help, you know. And Nick Hogben, the loveliest artist, who featured on episode number 69, he's an ambassador for an organisation for people who have got to that exact point. They're called My Black Dog. And if you don't feel like speaking verbally to someone, My Black Dog allows you to do it in text or email form. But honestly, just getting the words that are bouncing about inside your mind into text form really is quite a release. Just a little something to take note of and, well, bear in mind, really. Well, that was a tad more serious than the average end of a podcast, wasn't it? But, you know, we've all been there. And in retrospect, we all know that we're best off talking to someone. But again, thank you to Eliza for allowing me to use that part of our conversation. So I'll leave it there. Like I say every week, on whichever platform you listen to this podcast, you should be able to leave a comment. And if you could, that really would help us get noticed and anybody else looking for an art podcast. So, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.